Welcome to Into the West, a Middle-earth SVG podcast. My name is Charles. With me today are Richard, Ian, and we have two special guests today. We have Ben and Dave. So in today's episode, it's a special one that we've never done before, and it is an experiment to see if a new player's experience with a different tabletop game system has an influence on their intuition and knowledge when picking up MESBG. So Dave today is our player who's relatively new to the game. Can you tell us a little bit about your background in tabletop wargaming? I understand you're primarily a 40K player.
Charles, thank you so much. Yeah, I love 40K. I actually secretly have been, I say technically playing Middle-earth for a long, long time. My brother and I got that old school Two Towers starter set way back in the day. We never really did a lot with it, though, other than a few games against each other. But we've loved Warhammer and modeling forever, for as long as I know. And now with a lot of the new stuff and what we see with 10th edition Warhammer, it's gotten me so much interested into playing Middle-earth now and getting kind of into it. So I'm really, really excited to go into it today.
What's your knowledge of the current edition of Middle-earth Strategy Battle Game?
It's really just going to be surface level. I read all the current kind of rules. I've had, I think, a single game. I'm talking like a little baby scenario kind of thing with the current rule set. So I know a lot about things like, you know, what those heroic actions are, how movement works, you know, the turn phases. I can read a profile, but I'm not too familiar about things like when I should be doing that stuff or kind of the overall strategy of the game. I'm really excited to learn it. I am curious to see how much of it may carry over from the Warhammer side.
And then we have Ben, who you've seen on our channel before. He's a veteran MESBG player, constantly at top tables at tournaments, crushing fellow nerds there. But you have also have your fair experience in 40K as well. And I think that's the reason we brought you on today, because Charles, Ian, and myself, we have very limited knowledge. So we're going to rely on you to fill in the gaps for us here.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely excited. I started playing back when the Return of the King came out. Technically, Dave's been playing longer than me, if you count length. Maybe I've clocked a few more hours on the table than him. But yes, you'll probably see me. I've got one battle report that's been posted, a second one on Into the West. You wouldn't know I had any skill at the game based on how those two battle reports go, but they were still fun to play. I played 6th, 8th, and 9th edition 40K. Haven't dabbled in 10th edition yet, but I have read up on a significant amount of it. So yeah, definitely I'm excited to weigh in here where I can.
So I'm just going to quickly explain what we're going to do. So we've pre-selected 10 profiles across all the rule books, and some of them you'll recognize from the movies and the books, others maybe not so much. But what we're going to do is we're going to briefly go over each of their rules. And then based on Dave's knowledge of the game, we'll have Dave rate each profile in terms of competitive viability between a score of 1 and 5. And then afterwards, we will go over each profile and let him know how he did. So, but before we get started, Ben, how do you think Dave will do? Just give us a guess of how many you think he'll get right.
Dave's a smart guy. I don't know if those of you know, but I've known Dave a very long time. We're going eight years. So I'm giving him 80%, which is an A minus in you know, if you're into your GPA at university, but that's what I believe. I believe in you, Dave.
It's very generous. I accept it. I'm terrified now.
Pressure's on. There's only two you're allowed to get wrong, Dave.
You know the lifelines. So if you're ready, let's play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Here we go.
One more thing before we get started. I just want to shout out to our patrons over on Patreon. Thank you all for your support. Really appreciate it. If you're interested in more content, as well as a list of all of our perks, please head over to Patreon to take a look. Link is in the description. All right, let's dive right in. First profile is Boromir of Gondor. So, you know, very iconic character.
I don't think this profile has changed at all since it was first introduced like 20 years ago. So hopefully it's kind of familiar.
I was going to say, yeah. This one, right away, I remember from that original Two Towers release, my brother and I being so angry about the Horn of Gondor in particular, and just running three things into him at all time. Okay, let's break this down. 95 points. I know in the Warhammer world, the a game type, 2000 is usually the kind of competitive point zone. Of course, that's not going to, I don't think, translate one-to-one when it comes to this kind of thing. But interesting right away, things that I spot first on Boromir. Mr. of Gondor does not have any fate points, which is terrifying. I think that that's super fluffy, though, like as far as connecting him to the movies and taking those arrows. So I do like that. Six might sounds like a good time. Moving six, so my first thought right away is I got to give him a horse. I want him to move around. Elven cloak, I, if I'm not mistaken, is the one where they can't be targeted so far. I might need a correction on this one.
If you're partially covered by a terrain piece, then you can't be shot at over a certain distance.
Okay, interesting.
You also have to be on foot for the cloak too.
Yes. Oh, I didn't know you can combine them too. Okay, good to know, good to know. I mean, I love that active ability. So for me, Boromir looks like he's here for just cutting down hordes. So again, if I'm thinking this coming from my Warhammer kind of side of stuff, this is my assault cannon. This is my my shredder that I'm looking to take out 100 things at once in. So I'm going to throw that shield on him and I'm going to walk him towards a horde of something just to see if I can trigger that outnumber 2-to-1 or more thing at any point. For me, again, only looking at this profile for a second here, keeping him more or less alone just so I can make sure that he's always going to be outnumbered, and I want him to keep him as far away from anything that can punch him back as possible, just because of that low fate number. I'm going to give Mr. of Gondor, as far as his total profile goes, oh, the problem is I don't know the rest of stuff. I'm collecting Lothlorien and I'm collecting Moria, so I'm going to give him a 2.7 out of 5.
We'll round it up to a 3 then.
Yeah, 3 out of 5.
So, Ben, you want to tell him the verdict? I think this one is pretty universal in the competitive scene. I think you could possibly maybe have a standard deviation of 1 here, but I think we could all probably agree on a number.
Yeah. So, Dave, I have good news and bad news for you. The bad news is you weren't quite that close to his actual profile score. The good news is his score is much better than that. Typically, he sits in the 9.5 to 10 range. He is considered not as a sucker punch unit. He's a might battery. He basically is the cheapest way to get 6 points of might. If you think about it, if you were to buy 2 captains for about the same price, you'd only get 4 might and not as strong a profile. But the fact that he is 6 might, you're calling heroic moves for days. He has march, so he can book it. The final thing that makes him so effective is because he's part of the fellowship list. The fellowship has a very easy time allying with other lists. And being a hero of valor, the fellowship is allies with most other lists. In a convenient alliance, you can't ally in unless you're a hero of valor or higher. So him being a hero of valor, him being at least a convenient, if not a historical, with most good lists, means you can bring him with almost any list for only 100 points. So he's considered extremely good. You are right, he doesn't have any fate. So he's not without his weaknesses, but he would be a 9 times out of 10, he will more than pay himself back.
He is killed relatively easily, but most of the time he can dish out enough damage to make it worth it.
He has a different profile in like a Gondor list than he would for the Fellowship list, like a totally different stat card.
We're not going to go into Boromir Captain of the White Tower today, but we just put out a video, top 16 good heroes in the game. And actually, both the Boromir profiles actually made the list. So that's that's something, if you're interested, go check it out.
Okay, let's move on to a profile that is on the evil side now. So it's the second one on the list, and it is the Balrog. The Balrog of Morgoth. Everyone knows this character, and he's a whopping 350 points.
Just to add on, because Dave, you mentioned earlier that a Warhammer game is maybe about 2,000 points. I would say Middle Earth is roughly, most tournaments are 500 to 800 points.
Okay, so I mean, like, that's going to tell me a ton about this stat card right away. If I'm 350, that's a lot to sink into one thing. Now, I happen to be a Balrog fan, so this is going to be a tough one. It's actually one of the first models that I had done just as a kid in general. As far as Mr. the Balrog here goes for this time, going through the thing here, yeah, 350 is just such a big investment right away. Now, I am slightly familiar with the version of him from that Quest of the Ringbearer book, but I love a couple things in particular about this card. Just to first, the first one is that Fiery Lash movement abilities, especially movement for other models, is just in general insanely powerful. Things in 40k like a redeploy where you can move your stuff around after your opponent has, or shove things around, you know, behind a ruin or something. So that I love right away. So I love being able to whip things around. When it comes to goblins, I like his 12-inch courage test, being able, just because goblins are going to be kind of nervous otherwise in general. Balrog Strikes, Dragon's Breath Fire, Set Ablaze special rule. Heroic combat turn without needing to expend a point of might. I like that too. This still seems like a ton to invest into a thing. Again, I'm cheating that I know that other Balrog profile exists. So for this one, 350, I think that's too expensive at 800 points. When it comes to Moria, I'm just going to take more goblins. Mr. the Balrog, you're going to get 2 out of 5 here from me officially.
Ben, you want to deliver the news?
Yeah, you're pretty close. Yeah, he's typically a very mid-tier rating. Usually, I've heard they rate him higher as part of the Legendary Legion because he actually gets enough buffs that I'm not going to say he's like he's considered like an 8 in the Legendary Legion. No, but he's definitely much higher than mid-tier. But as a base profile, I think you're right on the nose. Usually the 2 to 2.5. The biggest drawback is to spend 350 points on a model with no might. If you're rolling 4 dice in a combat, you have about a 60-something percent chance of rolling a 6. Slightly more than half of your fights, you're going to roll a 6, which means only slightly under half of your fights. You're not going to roll a 6, and every turn that Balrog doesn't kill something, it's just a waste of points. I think that the best way to describe it is it's 350 points that you're rarely going to get points back on.
I will say that this profile is kind of a pub stomp. So when newer players play the Balrog, they think he's like a 5 out of 5. But yes, because they might throw all their guys, all their heroes into the Balrog. And if you look at the raw stats, you can't really beat the Balrog. So it's just, as you get better and you play better opponents, then they'll have workarounds with this profile. So that's why he's not usually like super competitive. But I will say, you have a good eye in pointing out the Fiery Lash. That is probably the rule that keeps the Balrog like usable in the competitive scene, because that, even against like a really good player, if you get the lash off against their leader, their general, then you actually have a very good chance of winning right off the bat.
The Balrog is a little bit tough to use for another reason, and that is because he has such a big base size. So I know in 40k, the model positioning doesn't matter as much, but in middle or strategy battle game, you need to be base to base with the model you're fighting in order to fight them. And so moving only 6 inches and having a 60 mil base, a lot of times he can get blocked and trapped and he won't be fighting for half the game. And so that's another reason why like big base models can be very hard to use for beginners.
Yeah, so
he's got wings. They got to give him flight. I don't understand.
It's controversial. I mean, he did fall down with Gandalf, though, and he didn't use the wings then. But yeah, like, so just to add on to what Charles is saying is, like, you know, like, I know, like, in 40K, you can kind of, like, bubble wrap, like, big things and make it impossible to get them. So in Middle Earth, you can kind of do, like, base blocking. So you lock up other models in combat and you just make it so their base can't fit through the gaps. It's kind of like a similar thing. So you just kind of block things out, you know, like, they're untouchable. And you can also obviously use that against big things, or you can use it to your advantage.
Ian, are you trying to flex your 40K knowledge here?
Show off. I know, like, a thing.
He's out. We maxed him out.
Okay, so the next profile is the Barrow White. So this is our first spellcaster. The Barrow White is from the Angmar faction. And since he only has one spell, we'll just go over paralyzed. Basically, if the target fails to resist the spell, they've fallen asleep. So they're basically count as they're on the ground. Models near him and also the model itself can roll a dice at the end of each turn. Only on a 6 will they wake up. You get to roll 1 dice per model trying to wake the model up.
And then when you're like asleep or paralyzed, any model that you're in combat with, enemy model, they automatically win the fight and then they just strike at you directly and you count as trapped. So it's like double strikes.
I like a couple things that I'm seeing right away. Now, unfortunately, I don't see a lot of the stuff around it. I don't know what is great in an Angmar list. I don't know right who else that this is going to be hanging out with so much. But with that being said, 50 points. Knowing now that Boromir is 95, if I can keep that, you know, that really high value target locked down with that spell. That seems like a pretty good trade for 50 points, casting on fours, heavy armor and sword. I don't know what Blades of the Dead does. I do know what Terror does. He's moving six. I like this a lot. Being able to trade, hopefully, enough and against a Boromir, against something scary. I also don't know, can this character, can casters counterspell with their abilities?
Every hero has like the will category right beside the might, right? And for the spellcaster, like the Barrow White, you use will to cast a spell. So, you know, you can choose however many dice you want to roll for each will point. And then same thing as resisting. So if you're a hero that's being targeted, you can use however many will points to resist. And all you need is to get the equal roll or higher to resist it.
Okay. Also, all right.
You only get to cast one spell a turn.
Also good to know.
You can't, like, chain things.
Yeah.
Also good to know. Although I don't assume most games are going more than five turns. Like, what's the average game go?
It could be anywhere from, like, 4 to 10 to 12 turns.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, I'm hoping to lock down a hero. This guy's just, as far as when I see this profile, I see a cruise missile into a hero. I'm giving the Barrow White... I can't do half points? Half points are illegal?
You can give half points.
if you're doing it on 5, you can give half points.
So, I'm going up to 4, then. He's going to be a 4 because I like this cruise missiling into something more expensive than him and hoping that we get these casts off. His role in my list as an ultra noob is going to be, yes, cruise missile into a character I don't want to have running around.
I think we can give you this one. I think this one we would probably all say either 4 or 5 out of 5. So it's just like you said, ridiculously strong. This might be actually one of the most powerful spells in the game, and he's the only spellcaster that can cast this particular spell.
I have no idea. That's also funny and terrifying.
It was very insightful of you to say, I don't know the models around him. Like, you didn't just look at the character. You're like, I wonder what his role is. And Angmar needs spirit models to be effective. So he's a spirit model because he makes the guys around him terrifying. Once again, Angmar is very much a magic hero assassin-y type list. I like the word you use, cruise missile. And then he's a hero fortitude, so you'll pay for him anyways, but the fact that he can take 12 orcs with him also adds a lot. So because he's kind of like a must have in the Angmar list, that, you know, even I agree with Richard, on his own I think you're right on, a 4 out of 5 is great. In the Angmar list I think he's a 5 out of 5, because you're not taking the Angmar list and without him. So yeah, great, bang on, good job with the score there.
Great job.
So, Dave, I think you're on 2 out of 3. So you're in line with Ben's prediction so far.
I'm proud of myself and shocked, but I mean, this is fun. I'm enjoying myself.
You could be wrong one more time.
I gotta go home.
3 strikes and you're out.
Oh, I'm so screwed.
The next profile is Denethor, Steward of Gondor. Actually, you may recognize him from an older edition because he came out in 2003 after Return of the King. The profile hasn't changed a ton since, but based on what you know, what would you say about this profile?
I think I have a Denethor. I don't think it's this one. I swear that the one that I had, I think he was holding that like that torch. I might be misremembering this model. I do like the one in the photograph too. Okay, what do we take a look? 35 points is basically free. He's a man of Gondor, hero of valor. I don't remember exactly how many characters I can take with that. He has an armor and a sword. I do not love his combat ability as well. Also, the fact that he can get controlled by the enemy player is terrible, and I never want that to happen. So again, my knowledge of the Middle-earth strategy battle game overall is on the lower end, but I'm fairly certain that there is a type of, I don't know if it's a rule set or a certain scenario where you need to fight with your leader. And I don't know if I love Denethor hanging around in combat or being able to be controlled by the enemy. 35 points. I assume that they are here just looking at the rest of these stats because he doesn't have a special ability too, that he's just there to be like a cheap squad leader kind of thing, like a cheap unit. Yeah, this isn't be my style, if not outright profile. So this is going to be my first 1 out of 5 for Mr. Denethor. And if I'm taking him, I'm taking him because I just want some more troops instead of taking a captain or something.
I think you got the right idea of like the reason you take him, because he's so cheap and you need heroes to lead your warbands. He's a great way to hoard out your list instead of taking like a big Boromir or something. I can deliver the news for this one. You're actually right about that mission where the leader has to kill enemies. However, that is only one out of 18 that a lot of situations, a lot of tournaments, you're rolling randomly for the scenario. So yes, he will have trouble in that scenario, but only if it comes up. So I wouldn't say that a lot of players bring him, but I think he's ranked above average. For me, it'd be sitting at somewhere around a 4.
Yeah, maybe 3.5. It really like a 3 to 4. He's far from an auto take, but you definitely can play him very, very competitively because there are ways to mitigate his crazy special rule. If you bring Boromir, he's very good. And then there's also another profile in Gondor, Hurin, which basically protects your leader. So even though he's like a very soft leader, you don't give up as many like points if he dies, if you have this other hero. So there's kind of preventative measures to mitigate his weaknesses a little bit. And then, yeah, like you said, he basically costs nothing and he can bring 15 warriors. So, you know, that's that's pretty solid.
I'm with Charles on this because Denethor is actually the only way I run my Minas Tirith list. He's my leader at Toster Cabers, which was a 500-point tournament, not this year, but last year I brought a Minas Tirith list. So 500 points, an average list would be 25 models. I think I had 35. So he was a good way to bring lots and lots of troops.
And I'll also say, like, I think his stat line is underrated. He's actually not one of the worst leaders in the game. There are certain factions that you play, which you'll bring like a leader that is much worse than him. He does have the fight 5 and 2 attacks. So he's on the below average, but he's not like garbage tier.
Yeah, it's just if he had like a couple points of might, he actually would be like a pretty competent combat profile for like a cheap points cost. But because he doesn't and because of the crazy rule, it kind of brings him down a bit combat wise.
So your logic, Dave, was perfect. You're like not a great warrior. Good if you're trying to hoard out. The only thing wrong with the rating was the score, but that's all.
Interesting. Just, yeah, so fascinating. And I actually didn't even realize that the Boromir clause in there is funny. Now, can you take the Fellowship Boromir with Denethor? And will that, like, trigger, like, that'll count for him as far as that's concerned?
That's a bit more cheesy because it's a convenient alliance. It's not, like, one of the standard alliances. So I've definitely done it, but, you know, some more thematic players might not have done this kind of list.
I'm surprised to hear Richard use the word cheesy. I've seen how you play. I didn't know you knew that word existed.
Yeah, I'm self-aware.
In Richard's canon, Denethor followed Boromir to the Council of Elrond. So,
and then brought back an army of elves and clansmen.
And go here.
The next profile is Goblin Mercenary Captain. So give you a moment to look over it. What do you think of this one?
I've been trying to absorb as much as I can right away. Okay, 50 points. He's got Denethor right there. Bam. I like that. Number two, I don't know what Cave Dwellers does, but I really like those two special rules right off the bat. Not having to take spears means I just don't have to, as a modeler, I don't have to worry about modeling all those spears. Second, I just like the ability to just crunch up a bunch of things. For 40K, I play Space Marines primarily, but I have some Tyranids and some Imperial Guard, and I had to buy movement traits to play with them just because it takes a decade to move them across the table. And if you like goblins, you run into that problem too, that I'm probably going to need some movement traits. So being able to just shove kind of stuff, that's going to be handy. And the redeploy on the second one, again, triggers my redeploy vision of that's exactly what I want to do. Interesting. It's so cool that it's in a terrain kind of piece specifically. It tends to be board edges in Warhammer for when it comes to that kind of stuff. So I really, really like that. So assuming you're taking more of those mercenaries with him to trigger that chittering hordes, I love the captain. I'm going to give Mr. Captain 4 out of 5 right off the bat. And he needs to hang out with lots of friends to flank.
So if you've seen Ben's armies, he's a huge fan of these guys. So why don't I let Ben respond?
Yeah, I mean, I rarely play these days without him. I love the profile. You're probably within the ballpark of what I'd rate him. I actually would rate him maybe a little bit less. I think he's a little over-costed. That's my only beef with him. Everything else about the profile I'm okay with. Azog's Legion suffers from, they have two named heroes. Both of them are extremely expensive, so it's very hard to get numbers. So the reason that this guy's profile really bumps up the list, the only way to bring Goblin Mercenaries into the Azog's Legion list is with the captain. So if you want to hoard out your list, you have to take him. So kind of like the Barrowite in the way that he fulfills a role. I'd probably give him a 3.5. But yeah, you're within the one point variance that Richard said we're allowed there. So good call.
I would probably give this profile a 5 out of 5. So I guess we can even out to a 4 because I think Ben has a point in Azog's Legion maybe. But I would say in the other list that can be taken, Goblin Town is... You have to take this profile because Goblin Town's all about hoarding, but then they're very slow. With this profile, like, mobility is just so powerful with all the objectives and the different scenarios. Yeah, like, it's priceless.
For reference, like, this is basically like a deep strike. In Lord of the Rings, there's like two armies that have units that can deep strike. It's these guys and hobbits. And I guess there's also the Watcher in the Water. I saw yes. Richard's hand go up. Yeah, the Watcher also can show up out of the ground. So there's three units that can do it. And then there are some other ones, like, depending on scenario, where you show up on different table edges, but these are the only ones that can do it in every game where they want to in, like, a terrain piece usually.
My opinion is probably closer to Richard's. I would probably give him close to a 5 as well, but you're in the right ballpark.
I like the guy that chooses to use him every game is the one that gave him the lowest grade.
I've noticed that trend. It's like everybody who has to play against these things always rates them super high, and then people who, like, use them a bunch, they're like, ah, it's good, but it's not great.
Back to our original question of, like, right, do these skills or do these kind of, like, does this knowledge kind of transfer over? That, like, yeah, I feel like, I think the Balrog and the old Boromir, of all these profiles, the only ones that I've even seen before, and being able to spot, like, okay, well, this is why I want it, has been funny combined with the fact that I've been off on the actual ratings for most of them. That's a weird combo.
Okay, so the next one that we want you to review is the first siege weapon, and that is the Windlance. So this one is also from The Hobbit, and it's the giant crossbow, basically, that sits on, like, top of Dale. How a siege weapon works is it's like any other shooting weapon. You shoot once a turn, except for siege weapons, they're a little bit less accurate. So you do have to roll, like, a scatter test to see if you hit your intended target or not. Have a look and let us know.
Scatters don't use templates. It's just, like, you roll a die. On a 6, you hit your target. On a 1, you miss completely. And on a 2 to 5, your opponent picks somebody nearby.
Gotcha. Instead of like a template plate kind of thing.
Yeah. So it's not a template kind of thing.
Okay. We still
but
get to know.
Some of them do splash damage, but.
I loved the templates from some of the old versions of 40K in that, but in the modern game, they've removed them. And I think it's better. If you don't, you get this just bizarre look of either people putting, like, giant lines that stretch across the battlefield to keep unit cohesion. It just looks very silly. Although, I don't think Middle-earth had the unit coherency kind of stuff. So that would almost be interesting to me again to bring that back. But anyway, when I see this 75 points, that seems on the higher side overall. 50 points for a captain upgrade seems extravagant. Additional crew, I don't even know what that does other than just guys to hang out with it. Do the additional crew or captain actually affect the firing of the weapon?
It's more so if the guys manning it die.
Fair enough.
So you have more guys to actually fire it and use it.
That's good,
and
too.
The captain
I want that.
Provides 2 points of might. Which could
okay. Be. When firing the links as a battlefield target, the shot only scatters 3-inch rather than 6-inch. This all seems fine, but this seems really, really expensive. I don't know what I'm shooting down for this kind of thing. Crew by 2 wars, deal armor and sword.
One other thing about siege engines is the target that you hit will die if they don't have a fate point that saves them.
The really big monsters like the Balrog, it'll do half the amount of wounds. But for most normal targets like heroes and trolls and stuff like that, then it'll instant kill the model if they don't fate it.
So you get two guys with it, and one of them is the vet. I don't want that captain. That's way too expensive. I probably don't want that much crew. So right off the bat, I'm just going to run this thing naked as far as I'm concerned, if I have to take it. 75 points seems like a lot. But again, I don't know Dale's stuff either. I don't know. This doesn't seem like my style. And how many do I get? One shot a turn? One shot a turn? That's too much. I'm out. Windlance is getting. It's my first. Second? One out of five.
Wow.
I would argue this is a zero out of five.
So you say you nailed it.
Well, just look at that thing. Yeah, the captain for 50 seems outrageous.
Well, if the game lasts, let's say, an average of 10 turns, you will get five shots off, and you'll scatter one of them. So yeah. you'll maybe kill four warriors the whole game, statistically speaking.
Because the chance I'm not going to be specifically hitting stuff just because of that scatter, right?
And even if you hit the hero, he'll fate the wound. So,
I think the main thing to remember is there's other siege weapons like catapults and trebuchets that can actually do splash damage. Even if you don't get the six, if you get the 2 to 5 for those other siege weapons, they can actually do a decent amount of damage. You'll at least make your opponent like spread out their whole army, and you know, that's like a psychological game in itself. So those other siege weapons definitely have a leg up on the Windlands.
Like, is there any kind of crossplay or play with like Bard or like the Black Arrow or anything like that?
Yeah, the Bard can operate a Windlance as well. In this game, it's kind of a meme pick because of how expensive the Windlance is. So generally, you won't see it at a tournament. So we're going to do another siege weapon now. And this one is the Gondor Avenger Bolt Thrower. So the main difference to keep in mind is it shoots multiple bolts instead of one a turn. So you roll D6 shots, and then there's an upgrade there called Swift Reload. Basically, instead of rolling D6, you roll two dice and you pick the highest number. The second difference is, unlike other siege engines, this engine does not instant kill targets. They cause one wound each if they wound successfully.
Does not scatter. So it doesn't have that extra scatter roll.
That is interesting. We also have a much shorter range on this one, 50 points, although I don't know how big these tables are getting in general. So
the standard regulation match is 4x4.
Okay, good to know. Man, Gondor, infantry, and warrior keywords. Okay, so right away, again, first thing I'm seeing is like, I am not taking that 50-point captain upgrade. No, thank you. That's too expensive. 20 points to that reload seems like a lot, too. Although D6 coming from 40K and a D6 las cannon for a long time where you are pretty much guaranteed to just eat ones and twos on that thing all the time. I don't love how random that is. Although certainly being able to put out more than one shot a turn is more attractive. I'm putting this above the Windlance. I mean, I'm cheating now at this point by saying that. But no, exactly the same move. I'm going to give this a 2 out of 5, the same kind of thing. I don't want to invest into it. That seems like a lot of random that I don't love. To be able to put out some range. My first thing is I'm going to take bows or something like that first.
So, guys, what do you think? Can we give it to him? I think there's some people who would agree with you. I personally would probably give it a 3, but it's in that range. It's playable, but yeah, it definitely has its weaknesses.
Yeah, it's a little controversial. And also, like, to your comment about the Swift Reload, it's kind of, some people love to take it. Some people think it's too expensive. Other people just say, why don't you just grab a second bolt thrower? Because instead of grabbing the upgrade.
The math doesn't work out for Swift Reload.
But it's... Yeah. But
I've only seen lists with this run decently at a tournament twice, and both of them ran 2 of them. So it's either like you commit your army around the profile or just don't bother.
I'll also add that, Dave, you are like 100% spot on with the captain thing. It's the most troll thing. Like, you have to like brainstorm to think like, hey, is there like ever a situation that we would take the captain? And then it's like, okay, maybe if we do this, but it's generally a bad pick.
Like, I know that like list building, I this part I know is going to be very similar to, again, that Warhammer side where I want to have a list that's ready for all comers. I don't want to go super specific. Unless that there's a really really specific meta where I'm playing. I'm going to make a list that does kind of a little bit of everything. I can't see myself specializing that much into one thing.
Based on what I know about 40K, shooting is a lot more powerful than in this game. So in Middle Earth, sometimes you take shooting not necessarily to shoot your opponent off the table. Sometimes siege engines are taken as like a psychological threat. So if you put like the bolt thrower on one side of the board, it might deter your opponent from walking that in that direction. So sometimes they're beneficial that way.
That's a good point. The mind games.
Yeah, we were definitely trying to trap you with the hey, let's bring the machine gun, the most 40K like model that we have.
Okay, so the next profile is Malbeth the Seer. So this is a character from the books, and he's in the Arnor list. So his main rule is that models within 6 inches of him, they get a 5+ save.
Well, that's fun. 70 points. Okay, again, I don't know the Arnor lists specifically. So once again, I'm sadly unable to see or kind of have an idea into what he's buffing. I do like an apothecary, though, someone that can do some healing or wound prevention in this case, it looks like. On a 5+, so what's that, 1 in 3? How often can I do this? Every time something within 6? Okay, that's a good time. Yes, that I do like the idea of an additional save. I'm going to value that pretty high. 70 points sounds expensive to me if this is going to be almost a tenth of my list on an 800-point army. Still, though, I like the idea of having some damage reduction because you can still use fate as normal. Yes, I like it. I'm going to give this probably 4 out of 5. Although I don't know what else he's doing other than just buffing some stuff around him and hanging out with a jumble of friends.
Armor saves.
Yeah, this profile is probably like one of the only armor saves in the game. Like there's some bears that also have it. Maybe like a berserker has like a 6+ save, but it's super rare in Middle Earth.
I just learned now there's a bear army, so I know now what my next collection is going to be.
Be prepared to chunk out some change.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's awesome.
This one was my idea to put on the list, primarily because armor saves are super common in 40K, and this is like the only one. And I know like a 5+ is really bad in 40K, but in Lord of the Rings, basically nobody has armor saves. So when you having a 5+ is better than having none.
Yeah, I mean, usually we would talk about it just in the terms of, like, how many more wounds are you gaining or how much more just effective toughness, right, are you going to get? And if you consider that that's 1 in 3, if you have a hero with 3 wounds, hang out with him, that's a free wound on that thing. And then just the mathing out, you know, how often am I able to do that versus so many stuff, then, yeah, that looks pretty attractive. I don't know what else, unfortunately, the army he would be hanging out with, but, yeah, no, I like that.
Well, I think that's the bonus, too. They're super cheap, but like tough defensively warriors. So yeah, it works very, very well. Like they go from already like super annoying to kill to like this army is impossible to kill.
So are we also going to go with a 4?
I think that's a pretty accurate rating there.
Yeah.
I think Dave has only gotten 2 that was off the mark. So yeah, very solid.
Pretty good. It's Ugluck. So this is the guy that says the meat is back on the menu. The leader of the Uruk scouts that capture Merry and Pippin.
I'm gonna do this right off the bat. I mean, meat's back on the menu, boys. We got that's got to be worth a point or two right there. I'm just gonna get to his profile now at this point. Okay, hero of fortitude. He's got 3 might, armor sword. He's got a few heroic actions. Any who defy the orders of the White Hand will meet a grisly fate. Force be broken. Broken is so many models die on my side.
If you're below half strength, then
below half. Okay. Broken. I can choose to kill a nearby model instead of taking courage chest. Oh, that's like one of my friendly ones. Simply choose a friendly warrior. For the more on that turn, what does it? You'll only pass this courage chest and stand fast. Interesting. So, coming from the 40K side, the effects of a lot of morale stuff really aren't that big a deal. My main army I play is Space Marines, and they just have a lot of stuff that helps them ignore kind of morale issues in general. I wouldn't value a lot of courage stuff the same way coming into the game, not knowing a lot about it. So for me, this wouldn't be an attractive profile just off the bat. Normally I'd give him one, but because of that, the meat, we're going to give him I'm going to give him 1.5. We're going to round that up to 2 if we can. No, this is a one-star profile for me.
We should explain the standfast. So standfast, after you're broken, you have to start taking these morale or courage checks individually. Every model has to every turn afterwards. And if they fail, they're basically removed as a casualty. And what heroes can do is heroes generally have better courage, and then they take a courage test. If they pass, everyone within 6 inches of the hero also considered as passed.
I can essentially delete a model just to guarantee he passes, and then his buddies around him pass.
I don't know. I don't see where the courage kind of set of stuff is going to really come in. And hopefully, if I'm winning, ideally, if I'm winning, I don't care about mechanics that help me if I'm losing. Right, I don't want to have comeback moves. I want stuff that's active right away so that I can do that. So I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to stay, even knowing that I'm probably going to be wrong, and that's fine. But I'm staying with my 1 out of 5. I want alerts. Give me alerts.
You're actually really close. I don't know about the other guys, but I think I'm thinking more of a 3. You're right about his head taker rule being not amazing, because everything you said, you're spot on about that rule. But his general stat line is actually pretty decent, especially if you're considering his cost. He can fight and bully like captain level heroes around his points value pretty easily. And also his heroic actions are very good for supporting the army. So overall, he's not a bad pick. Not like an auto include, but he's decent, I would say.
I just want to add in that even though your analysis was generally pretty accurate, I would say the morale or the courage test in Middle Earth is actually quite important. And the reason being is in competitive play, a lot of the times it's based on objective play to win the gaming points. So you could be, honestly, I've won my fair share of games when the other army's completely slaughtering me. Like, I haven't killed a single of their models. I have like 2 models left, but I still win the game. Because if you play the objectives correctly, like, you can still win. So I think it's very common in a long game for both teams or both armies to become broken. So it's actually more common than you think.
You're right. I didn't realize that it would be triggering that often.
Ian and I played a game at the Toster Cavers, and it was whoever has most number of models around the board. And we had a big fight in like one corner of the board, and then we just had scattered models to the rest. And every single model except for one elf ran away because we both broke from all the board quarters. And it went from like him losing all his models, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to win the game. And then 2 of my models ran away, and I was like, oh, he's winning now. Yeah. So yeah, the courage is unfortunately important.
Really swingy, yeah. Especially when it gets to late game. But like, I mean, in tournaments, it can matter less if you just run out of time and you don't end up breaking. But
I actually rate this profile maybe a 3.5 personally. The reason is because he's not that much more than a captain. He is only 10 points more than a captain. So you have to give up one model, like to trade one model plus a captain for him. You still get the march. You now have heroic strike. You have an extra point of might, and you have the head taker role. So instead of a one-trick pony, by giving up one additional model, you suddenly had one guy who could fulfill 3 different roles, right?
Okay, last but not least, we have to have something from Rohan. And we have Aylmer, Mr. Carl Urban himself. So this profile is actually pretty similar to the one you're familiar with. He's gotten a little bit more stats than before. He has 3 attack and 3 wounds now, and a special rule that he didn't have before.
Fun fact for everyone, Dave has met Carl Urban before.
Really?
Oh, wow.
It's actually true. In Prince George, of all places, for a convention. I think he was doing some stuff. Dread had come out, but he was doing a convention there, and we would often attend. Yes, I do have an Aomer somewhere. I don't know what Expert Rider or Horse Lord do to give myself a point of just I'm trying to defend myself on each single one of these profiles before I get to them, which is perfect.
I think we can explain the special rules to you before you give the rating, so it's a bit more accurate.
Sure. I like my defense, though, but yes, go ahead.
Expert rider, it's a nice little rule. It doesn't come up all the time. Is it re-rolled when you get dismounted, or is it plus one?
It's re-roll your thrown rider test.
Okay, yeah. So
you also can carry and more jump. Equipment. Yeah.
And jump, you're right. And yeah.
You can carry some extra equipment without bonus, without taking negatives to having a button like a bow and a shield. What else? You can also
to take light objects.
It's a bunch of small buffs.
Does a throwing spear use his profile for like damage or anything, or is it its own weapon profile? No, it doesn't. Okay. Okay, so I'm out on throwing spear. Sorry. I am giving him a shield just because I like shields in general. I'm going to give him a horse because he's kind of the marshal of the Riddermark. That'd be embarrassing if he had to show up without his ride. But I really like the flavor of his ability, just having Theoden or Eowyn hanging out with him. I assume that I'm running with this list Eowyn also mounted and same torpedoing her into something just to buff up Aelmer. I like that idea. 100 points seems like a lot too, though. How's this thing? Heroic strength. Interesting, but it seems like a lot of moving parts to get him going. I'm going to give Aelmer 3 out of 5 on the strengths that I'm also now investing into Theoden or Eowyn. So I'm like looking, I don't even know what they cost. I'm going to need to invest more to give him a ride and a shield. And I don't know if he's going to punch up enough more than that without having to also count those other things. 3 out of 5, the Riddermark's a good time.
Yeah, I think you ended off strong. Exactly what we would give them. I have met a few folks that, you know, really, really love Aelmer, but I think we would all agree with you here. It's a nice profile. Like, he basically is what we call a beat stick. He's going to kill like warrior models, and he's going to do a very good job at that. But the main thing is that a lot of people have wanted him to be changed to fight 6, because that fight value is actually very important, because most warriors can only get up to fight 5. Only the rare, you know, elves can get to fight 6, but fight 6 and above is where all the big heroes are at. So he's not quite there. And if he comes up against like a fight 6 or fight 7 hero, he has some issues fighting them one-on-one. So he's so close to being like very, very good. But yeah, I guess he's solid.
If you're trying to maximize his potential, then yeah, you're throwing in like extra heroes. You've got to sacrifice some. I once in a game managed to trap the Dragon Emperor. Eowyn died the previous turn, and Aelmer one-shotted the Dragon Emperor, wounding him on 4s with 8 dice. So it can work. Yes, I agree the fight 5 is an issue on your most expensive hero in the Rohan list, other than Helm, but you can't run Helm with any other hero. So typically it's Aelmer, and he ties the fight value of a basic elf or a Easterling in the Legendary Legion. So, yeah.
I'm glad you weren't swayed by your, you know, experience with meeting Carl Urban there to give him like a 5 out of 5. Very logical.
Okay, so those have been the profiles that we've had Dave review. Did you have any takeaways from this? Any surprises that you encountered during this experiment?
I mean, right away, Boromir and Denethor really, really both caught me out. Interesting that it's the two of them together too. Just coming from that stuff, I was impressed going through this kind of exercise. I was really impressed with how much I think a lot of the tenets of making a list in, I say 40K, but I mean, even playing Sigmar or Warhammer Fantasy or even War Master, how so much of it transfers over. I would absolutely say if you're listening and playing 40K or playing any kind of tabletop game, like, it's definitely made me right away want to do more Middle-earth stuff. But just seeing how much of the things that I already know is going to apply and is going to kind of carry over is really neat. And there's so much in the game now that I don't even recognize, right? Coming from only just the movies when I was collecting the models originally, to see stuff from the books and that is really neat too.
Well, thank you, Dave, and also Ben, for coming on, joining us in this fun episode. And viewers, thank you all for watching, and look forward to the next episode of Into the West.